Hello, and welcome to On Staging, a discussion podcast highlighting the staging of community theater productions in Calgary and the surrounding area. I'm Kyle Gould, and today I get to hear all about something I'm missing out on. You see, in 2013, a friend of mine from choir in the late 90s posted to Facebook that she was starring in and had musically directed something called The Gondoliers by Gilbert and Sullivan, being put up by something called Morpheus Theatre at a place called The Pump House. In 2013, I had absolutely no idea what any of those words were. But when I mentioned this to my wife, Marie Claire, she said, "Oh, we have to go. It's one of my favorite musicals. I just love Gilbert and Sullivan." And thus began my introduction to shows at the Pump House, a little theater company called Morpheus Theater. And of course, now a lifelong fascination and love with the comic operettas of Gilbert and Sullivan. The 2013 production of The Gondoliers earned Morpheus Theatre 2 Cat Award nominations, outstanding costuming for Phaedra Vandenbrunn, as well as musical direction for Wilma Rothbauer and one of my guests today, my choir friend from the 90s, Winifred Hume. This nomination for Winifred was the first of many to come. 12, in fact, receiving 3, one for outstanding adaptation of the gender-flipped Pirates of Penzance, and 2 for musical direction for Hunchback of Notre Dame and Yeoman of the Guard. Winifred is now back, 11 years later, to musically direct The Gondoliers again. And joining me today as well is Maya Swedberg, whom Morpheus has brought back as the choreographer for The Gondoliers, after her 2 nominations over the last 2 Cat Awards for Outstanding Lead Performer in Good Night Desdemona, Good Morning Juliet, and then the following year as the choreographer for The Yeoman of the Guard. This is Maya's 5th production with Morpheus Theatre, and while Maya has done a lot with Morpheus, and Winifred as well, and even I'm up to 20 productions with Morpheus now, none of us hold a candle to my last guest today. This is Sean Anderson's 2nd time on the podcast this season, and 2nd time in the director's seat as the director of The Gondoliers. Sean has been involved in every single Morpheus Theatre production, which by my count, The Gondoliers is Morpheus's 130th production, with over 1,000 performances through 29 years of theater.
Wow. I stopped counting at 25 years.
I counted line items today, so if there weren't any line items that were missing, then they didn't get counted in. Some line items had double shows on them and were double features and whatnot, so it is a bit muddled, but at the same time, Sean Anderson has been nominated for over 25 Cat Awards, with at least 11 awards engraved in his name, and doubtlessly more than that for Best Production and Outstanding Production Awards. Nonetheless, without further ado, let's just chat about the show I've been looking forward to all year long and look ahead to The Gondoliers, opening at the Pump House Theatre here in Calgary on April 26th, running until May 4th, with a cast of 28, a production team of 14. A huge team has been assembled to bring this production to stage. Folks, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kyle.
Yeah, thank you.
So, why The Gondoliers and why now?
Well, it's sort of a pattern that we try to follow, doing the top 3 GNS shows every 3 years and filling the in-between years with something a little different. And it had, as you pointed out, been 10, 11 years since we did The Gondoliers last. I really liked the show and I wanted something nice to end this season on.
That's wonderful. Yeah, that's to note. In 2003, Morpheus Theatre presented The Gondoliers, directed by Richard Michelle Pendlebury and Tim Elliott. In 2013, it was directed by Tim Elliott and Mike Johnson. And in 2024, the 3rd time Morpheus presents this production, Tim Elliott is now a member of the cast. Marking, along with Sean Anderson, your 3rd time with this show, producer both other times and now the director. 2nd timers in this show is Winifred Hume, Jeanette Simoneau, and Tracy Smith, and then a whole slew of first timers to The Gondoliers, let alone first timers to Morpheus and first timers to Gilbert and Sullivan.
Absolutely. It is really wonderful to have such a young cast this time who have not been part of a Morpheus show in the past. A number of these people, this is their first time on stage even. So with Wynn and Maya in the casting chairs, helping us make the choices, we really saw a lot of potential in all of these cast members and looking forward to helping them grow and be on the stage.
So last year was Yeoman of the Guard, and this year is the Gondoliers. That is exactly the order of release of the Gilbert and Sullivan operettas. Is that just happenstance or was that deliberate?
Yeah, happenstance.
Well, Beautiful luck.
You know more about this than I do.
I do spend a lot of time thinking and reading about Gilbert and Sullivan and their operettas and everything else that's going on. This show is a light comic opera. And why did you come back to this show when you've already musical directed it once? What brought you to come and do it again?
Well, I was really excited when I heard it was coming back on the docket. Although my first show with Morpheus Theater was actually in 2008 with their production of Pirates, I count that sort of 2013 production of The Gondoliers as I decided, well, this is home now. I'm staying. And so I've been involved in every single Gilbert and Sullivan production since then.
Yeah, you have.
And that year was a really fun year. Lots of very interesting things happened during the rehearsal period. I started out just as a member of the cast in the chorus and ended up music directing with Wilma and ended up singing the role of Janetta as well.
Wait, so you start in 2013, you started out as a member of the chorus, then became the musical director, and then became Janetta.
Yes.
Wow. Well, that is definitely a story for another podcast. So, what leads
so
to
it was really, yeah. And that was my second Gilbert and Sullivan. And of course, as a classical singer, I had encountered lots of those songs before and always hoped for a chance to sing some of those roles. And I just love the music. In The Gondoliers, there's some of the most beautiful music. When people ask me, well, what's your favorite Gilbert and Sullivan? You know, I'll often say, well, for all around vibes, good times, music, and humor, I guess I would say Pirates is my favorite, but Gondoliers has some of my favorite music. It's such an interesting challenge, particularly for the chorus, as their responsibility for singing and dancing, their endurance, and the contrasts in the show, the humor, the lightness. It's just fun all the way through, but demands for people to work, for commitment, and really starting to feel the love for that music, which as a music director in general for Gilbert and Sullivan is one of my main goals. Like, I love when we have so many new, great people. I joke that they'll be my new GNS converts. There's always some that stick around, sometimes for years. And I just believe it's such an important place in our city. And I just, part of what I consider one of my, I don't know, personal missions, I guess, is to help with the furtherance and the continuance of this art form for everyone here.
And so when Sean asked you to be the musical director for this production, was it an immediate yes? Or did you have to give it some thought?
I gave it a little bit of thought, as I often maybe miscalculate how busy I'm going to be sometimes. Yet, it is always one of those things that I'm willing to make time for. And also knowing that just because of the way things work out in the city right now, there aren't a lot of people to music direct for the Gilbert and Sullivan shows. And I'd love...
Why do you think that is?
Part of it is that, first of all, not lots of people know about the style. They don't have a lot of experience with it, maybe. Or they feel like maybe they're not ready to take something like that on.
Because I believe that there's a preconceived notion that Gilbert and Sullivan is harder than other musical theater productions. Why do you think that is?
Well, because it's written for people with classical training, not to say that that's better than sort of musical theater training, it means that the voice parts, particularly for the higher voices, are higher. It takes a different kind of technique that maybe some people who sung more contemporary musical theater haven't had the chance to learn yet.
Hmm. I feel like that may have been the case for productions that were made in the 50s through the 80s, but a lot of the new released productions, a lot of new musical theater does seem to have that higher pitched voice, especially for men and sopranos. There seems to be in newer musical theater kind of a return to the range that is required of a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta.
Yeah, maybe. I can't say since I'm not very familiar with that.
Yeah.
But it has some particular challenges for particular voice types. It's not quite so easy in operetta to cast people of different voice types in different roles.
Tell me about it.
That's just kind of the nature of the beast.
Absolutely.
I find that people always rise to the challenge. And that's part of kind of the excitement of doing these things in a community theater setting is the flexibility and the desire of people to learn something new.
So is it safe to say that, you know, 2024, when you're asked, or 2023, I would imagine you, when you were asked if you wanted to do musical direct for the Gondoliers, that you looked back at your 2013 experience of being in the chorus, then being the musical director, and then also being the lead, that you may not have gotten a chance to really enact a vision that you would have wanted as a musical director for that production, and then get a chance to actually do the things you would have liked to have done in the first time?
Yeah, no, that's definitely part of it. I was excited to have that chance to revisit it.
So what are some of the things that you wanted to really focus on and be like, this is what I want to take ownership and develop and transform this show into?
One of the things in particular was just to really play with the contrasts between the characters of the Gondoliers and their ladies, and also the noble characters, the Duke and the Duchess. And because it's an interesting show in that those two groups of characters are kind of almost completely separate. And they also have different kinds of music. And in this operetta style, the music really portrays the characters in its dynamics, in the range, in the different kinds of styles, in the different sorts of...
And there are so many different styles.
Yeah.
One of the things that's really important to talk about is Sullivan pinched a whole bunch of different regional types of music. Like Cachucha is Italian, but there's a Venetian component to it too. There's Spanish elements as well, as you can pull the different songs out and see from these different regions where Sullivan was spending his summers. He was going and partaking of the music and the flair and the flavor of those places. And that is also one of the reasons why he was so inspired while writing the Gondoliers, because he was able to use all these summers influences that he'd had.
Like, exactly, sort of the folk song style of some of it versus kind of the play on sort of serious opera, for lack of a better term right now, that would have been popular in that era.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really sort of interesting to explore with the singers. And we have a really great group this time.
Oh, that's wonderful. So the singing has begun and then the choreography takes over. Maya, did you jump at the chance to choreograph for this production? What was it like when Sean asked you if you wanted to be the choreographer?
I had to think about it because after Yeoman, I really enjoyed my experience with that. But at the end of it, I really had this moment of like, no, I love to be on stage. I don't want to be in the production. I want to be on stage. I don't want to do the side stuff. And then, I don't know, and then Sean asked me and then I had this moment and I'm thinking and I'm like, you know what? Yeah, okay, I'll do it. And so I think it's probably just because the opportunity was there and I was like, perfect, works for me. So, but it was definitely...
But there was some regret that you didn't get to be in the show?
I'm not sure because I don't know if I would, because I'm not a classical type singer too, so I don't know if I would have auditioned to be in the show.
Oh, okay.
You would have, because I would have made you.
Well, then
actually,
then I would have actually, because we would have called me and been like, hey,
I'm sorry, I know where to find you now.
Perfect. Can't hide anywhere. But
no.
Yeah, and then so I said, yeah, okay, for sure, because Yeoman was my first experience with GNS, so I was like, it's a whole different beast on its own, because I'm more familiar with like the traditional musical theater route opposed to like this classical style. And so it was a really big learning curve with Yeoman. And so like, I felt like, okay, like I understand it. Like sure, I can do this. I understand what's going on. And then once I got into it and I realized how much more of a dance heavy show this was, I was like, whoa, this was more than I was expecting.
It is. It's but a lot. How did you combat that?
A lot of YouTube.
Okay.
But, well, and a lot of just listening to it and just, I guess it's like that imposter syndrome like kicks in and I'm like, I can't do this. There's too many things to do. But right. Just spending time with the music. I really love the music. It's been really fun. It's a really fun show. And so, like, the more I listened to it, the more, like, it would just come to me. And then, like, playing with the performers and then trying to find their level of comfort while, like, so it's a little bit of play. Because sometimes I'll come in with these, like, really big ideas and I'm like, that's not going to work. We're right. Not going to get there. So.
Sounds like you spent a lot more time on this production than you did for the Yeoman of the Guard. How much more time? Is it double, three times the amount of time you've spent in preparation and putting things
Probably.
Together?
It takes me about, I would say, 3 to 4 hours to choreograph probably like 2 minutes of dance.
Wow.
At least.
And this show has probably 40 minutes of dance.
Yeah, a lot. We keep dancing. I'm like, and again. Sean made them told them they have to prep for this encore for the Kachuka, mm-hmm. and they don't like it. They're not happy.
The cast, you mean, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's screw them. They're the ones on stage getting applause.
Yeah, too bad for you.
Go You're, do your encore.
Go do it again.
I will say this, Gilbert and Sullivan is typically referred to as light comic opera, and I think The Gondoliers is probably the lightest of their entire stable of stories. There's really only one moment that's kind of darker and heavier, and then it turns out light in the end anyway. So there's...
Yeah, there's really...
It doesn't even seem like it should be fitting in this story. You're like, what is happening? Why is that lady strapped up? But nonetheless...
We haven't even made that dark.
Yeah.
It is very happy.
Oh, great. Even when the nanny comes in and the torture scene. So it's all just.
That's off stage.
She really did just have all the illustrated papers just sitting in the cell.
Even better. I like the ones where she's brought out and tortured, though, because it makes it seem like, what is going on and why is this happening?
It does seem like a really big swing.
It's an abrupt turn. Speaking of abrupt turns, Sean, you made the decision probably in 2022 or 2023 to go with the Gondoliers for this year's production. It's typically Morpheus's, I don't know how to term it exactly, not like a rule, but an unspoken process that you don't really want people to direct twice in the same year, let alone in consecutive years. So how did it come to pass that you ended up directing this production?
Well, it's also the reason why it took so long to get Wynn and Maya in place. And Wynn kept asking me, so do we have a director yet? Do we have a director yet? So I think she might have been anxious to be asked to music direct.
Right.
But the people that I asked were either interested in being in the show or just not available at this time to take it on. So after an exhaustive search.
How exhaustive? Did you talk 14 people, 20 people?
I don't know how many.
It was that many people. Wow.
It may have been two.
I don't know. From being in the know, there was definitely more than two people who have told me they've been asked. So yes. It was a big number.
Yeah, there was a number of people because I do try to get different people into the shows. I like to build up the experience of multiple directors, multiple music directors, multiple everything in the productions. I was the backup choice. And we just got to the drop dead date. We had to have auditions. So I decided, I guess I'm doing this.
And like, if you were always the backup, it also sounds a bit like this is something you've wanted to do.
I really enjoy this show, but I came into this with no preconceived notions, no preconceived plan.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to see what the actors brought to the stage for each of the scenes. I'm really glad that I've got two co-directors in Maya and Wynn who did come with that plan because those pieces needed it. The action, we could discover. We could figure out how does that music really play with those scenes? How does the dance lead into the next scene or lead out of the scene that we're just going from? So it was an exercise of exploration. And I really like to do that in the plays, especially when I'm not doing a farce. Farce is very much more prescriptive. It's much more like choreographing a dance. You have to have those entrances. You have to have that timing. It really is drilling it into the actors.
Oh, absolutely. And so what was the drop dead date?
I forget when we had the auditions, beginning of January. So I think it was over Christmas that finally made the choice.
Yeah, great. You asked me at the thing beginning of January.
Yes.
And then we were like, okay, auditions are like next week. And I'm like, okie dokie.
Oh, wow. So you didn't really have much time. Did you have a suspicion that you were going to be asked to choreograph or you had no thought
came
for
out
that?
Of the blue. And then I was like, well.
You've been kind of the de facto go-to person for musical direction as like first right of refusal for shows. Had you had conversations over the summer leading into this or were you also in the dark?
No, it kind of came up in the fall as I didn't hear anything. And I'm always curious about when are auditions, who is directing, who's music directing, because admittedly, those will then affect my decision to be involved. Because as Maya said, I also love to be on the stage and sometimes I would like to just audition. And other times I really want to music direct. So as it just kind of came down to the date, I guess I sort of said, well, you know, if you don't find anybody else, then I can definitely do that.
Oh, that's great. I mean, this is your 12th Gilbert and Sullivan, correct?
Yes, something.
Not included, even if you include the Sullivan and Gilbert.
Yes.
Yeah. So auditions happened. How well attended were the auditions?
Oh, pretty good. Nearly 40 people came out.
40 people
came
out.
Yeah, it was exciting. It was exciting auditions.
That's wonderful.
And we tried to get as many of them in, but there was just stage restrictions. How many people would fit on the set?
It's
how many people could we
costume? Don't have a single set. Everything is just the open, bare black wall and the bare black floor.
Just the floor, so you can fit everybody.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Pretty close. It's just 3 rows of risers and some drapes at the back.
I mean, yeah, there's been a lot of stagings of the gondoliers that is just like that. And then they bring things on to represent the different places, like the boats. And then they bring in the dancing columns and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So let's dive into the staging and the stagecraft too. So who is your set designer? Did you have one for this?
Derek Wilkinson.
Oh, wonderful.
Signed up to do it. And he was in our Yeoman of the Guard last year.
Yes, he was.
I think that was his second or third because he was also in Pirates of Penzance.
Right.
Yeah. So he's been in a few shows with us and I wasn't aware that he had done set building, but he came with some drawings and presented it and it's pretty much that original concept that we've gone with.
Wow. And he's playing the Duke of Plaza del Toro?
Yep.
Yep. That's great. So did he come to you with these drawings after getting cast or before?
Before.
Oh, wonderful.
Before we put out a call for stage designers, set designers beforehand. So, and he knew what we had to work with. So he pulled in some really nice stuff.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Really simple set. 9 risers, 3 rows, psych at the back with the Grand Canal and some of the buildings around the canal. And then Act 2, we moved to the gardens of the palace.
I'm excited. And so that leads me to my question. What are you excited about for audiences to get to see?
I think that the audience, especially in this show, it's the fun. I always remember my parents came to see the Gondoliers in 2013. I mean, they had seen my show in Pirates and they had seen David in some of his community theater shows, but they didn't have a lot of experience with seeing community theater, only just kind of professional theater. And my mom was so impressed because she said everyone looked like they were having such a good time. It was so fun. And I know that for the cast, a lot of work goes into portraying that fun.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's always worth it for them to feel the joy of learning something new and succeeding in putting this show on the stage. But also just the joy that gives the audience when they see everyone singing and dancing and having such a great time with such fantastic music.
So what specifically about this show, though, are you excited for audiences to get to see?
Well, this show has such long scenes of just prolonged party. Like, it's fun. They're singing. They're dancing.
They're drinking.
It's ridiculous in all of the best ways.
So those over-the-top moments of partying are what you're really excited to show?
Well, because it's
audience?
So great because the cast starts to let go a little bit more in those times once they're confident with everything that they're doing. And that's where I always wait for that moment when I can finally tell that people have stopped thinking so much about what they're doing. And it's just
being in the moment.
Yeah, they're just there.
How about for you?
You know, we've looked for the highs and lows in all the scenes, but there is no lows. It is all about just a good time throughout the play. I love the opening number, which turns out to be almost a quarter of the entire script.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yes.
It's crazy. And Gilbert literally asked Sullivan to do that, to make literally the first opening 15 minutes to be entirely to song and to music and just keep going with it, because he wanted to spin it further and further and challenge Sullivan in that way, but also show that he's, and he gave Sullivan so many alternative lyrics as well. He said, use whatever will work here in this moment, either these or this or this, so that it could continue in its longevity.
Yeah, it's a really fantastic moment of sort of dramatic continuance when this style still is very sort of classical era in its, okay, here's dialogue, then a song, mm-hmm. here's maybe a little recit, and then a song. But to have these longer stretches of sort of prolonged action is one thing that's very particular about that first scene. I mean, we usually see it in kind of the act finales, mm-hmm. but to have this like half an hour, like right at the beginning,
put it in the beginning,
sets the tone in a really unique way to these particular operettas.
Absolutely. And so was that a challenge then as well, getting, breaking that down into both a musical structure as well as directorially, to make sure you had people where they needed to be for rehearsals, and then breaking those things so you knew where entrances and exits were coming from?
It was pretty easy to break the songs down, but it's not usual to have a song into 6-7 different parts.
Right.
And it did take about 2 months of the rehearsal process before we actually started to piece it all back together.
Yeah.
So not everybody knew what was happening before or after any particular piece that they were in.
That's going to be so great for an audience to get to see that all woven together. Not only that from the audience's perspective, but for the cast as well.
And there's really three different groups. There's the mm-hmm. chorus, there is the gondoliers and their wives, and then there's the ducal party.
Yep.
And almost never did they come together for rehearsal.
Yeah.
So it was really hard scheduling that, especially around your typical illnesses and vacations and people being in other shows.
Yeah.
And
well, before we get into like some of the challenges of the show, Maya, what are you looking forward for audiences to get to see?
It's just fun. It's just, I'm just thinking about
specific moments.
There's like one I'm really excited about now that they're having fun with it, is like it's in the finale, but it's like, I call it the regular royal queen. Like they're going through and like, they just all of a sudden the actors are really finding the fun with it, and they just like, they light up, but they're not thinking so much. And it's just so fun to see. So I think as we get closer and closer, like they're going to be more and more moments like that, but they're just giving her and they just love it. And you can tell they enjoy it. And so it's,
that is a really particularly great part that Maya was just describing, one of my favorites. And I guess I would say is one of those times, partially from like my own memories, mm-hmm. singing one of those roles and being in that show, that the quartet that she's describing happens right after they discover that one of these gondoliers is the king.
Yeah.
So then the girls are like, oh, that means that one of us must be the queen.
Yeah.
And despite the gentleman's kind of prevarication of, oh, but we are Republican, but we could imagine the kind of king that would not be objectionable. Mm-hmm. They imagine this world in which they are royalty. And it's sort of this perfect lead in to that sort of act one finale. They have this moment where they're imagining this. Of course, then maybe if you could consider one kind of dark thing to happen, then they discover right after that that the ladies have to stay at home.
Right.
And they have to leave them behind.
Yeah.
But
I don't consider that
moment.
The dark part, because you know
it's not really it's not really dark. It's like just a down moment.
It's a challenge that they have to overcome.
A conflict in that.
For me, it's the relationship between the two brothers, the gondolieri themselves, Marco and Giuseppe. And then mm-hmm. it's also, for me, the relationship, seeing it blossom and then get pushed aside. And then the final amazing delight between Luis and Casilda. Those two things that happen in the show are two of the highlight moments that I want audiences
pieces do you get to see and really take rapture in the latter relationship between Luis and Casilda, but also the joy and the brotherly relationship between the two male leads.
Yeah, I can't wait until the moment where like the king is revealed is always like hilarious. And I can't wait to see how that pans out when the timing is just right.
Absolutely. Carrie Unger did such a great job of it in 2013. I can't wait to see what Adam Arnold does as Luis in this upcoming production. But Sean, you were telling us a little bit about some of the struggles that you've had too, especially with regards to scheduling. Scheduling actors, having done this podcast now for almost a year, is, of course, the bane of everyone's existence, especially for community theater. It is very hard to get everyone in line, in place, in time, where they need to be. Especially with sudden vacations, illnesses, deaths in the family, and other events that can occur, it makes it very difficult. Has that been the case here too?
No more than normal, but you just have to roll with it and adjust to your schedules. We just kept going, and we'd have a stand-in for a rehearsal, and then we'd have to catch somebody up a few weeks later, but we didn't stop the process. We just kept going, and I think everybody had enough time, and so much so that we've been able to be doing full runs for the last week and a half.
Oh, wow. Already? Jeepers. You still have like the rest of this week in rehearsals?
Well, we've got two more rehearsals.
Yeah.
Before we move to the theater.
So you'll have had six full runs. That's amazing.
It's looking pretty good at this point.
That's great. And it's coming in a good considerable time.
Yeah.
Shortened it up and people get faster and faster and faster.
Yeah, it's just over 2 hours, 10 minutes
right now. So then what has been some of the actual difficulties other than, I mean, we talked about it already, which was finding a director and making a decision and then putting everything together kind of as quickly as possible. What's been hard about putting this show up?
We had to do some last minute recasting, which was, there's nothing wrong with recasting, but it definitely throws an extra little stress in when you finally think you got it. Right. Just kidding, you don't have it. So that was a little bit, I felt like put us behind a little bit.
Yeah. But at least that happened early in the process. Yes. It was in the first week that I think two of our leads had to
step aside.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I always much prefer that. The last time I did the Gondoliers, it was 1 month before the show went up.
Ooh. Yeah.
That is the worst. So yeah, I mean, a little bit of recasting right at the beginning, that's not super hard. I mean, it is labor to go and find other people. What did you do to find the other people to take on these lead roles?
Asked Wynn.
Okay.
In which I bother everybody I know. Do you know any tenors? Yeah, I just ask the usual questions.
And it takes some doing. This is a community theater. These people are not getting paid. And as I think it's been alluded to a little bit, is that there's a kind of an expectation of a degree of musicianship or at least capability to do and perform these songs. I don't know, though, because I'm just doing my first FRC show, and I think the demands and the expectations are even more so or just assumed greater than even the expectations that have been put upon anyone to do a Gilbert and Sullivan through Morpheus. I feel like if I had to do it all over again, an opportunity to sing and dance with Morpheus is an easier ask than doing something like Something Rotten with FRC.
It's just different.
I mean, but they're the same thing. It's still a musical. It's still singing and dancing and acting on stage.
I know what you mean, though.
But like the demands upon the people are greater, despite the fact that it's not, even though Gilbert and Sullivan is considered harder or perceived to have a greater difficulty, the demands are not as structured and not as heavy. Like, you know, we would welcome you if you wanted to come and sit and learn and you had some raw talent to be transitioned. Mm-hmm. You're welcome to sit at the table and join the cast for Gilbert and Sullivan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, because of sort of my just belief in the art form, I always want to encourage everyone, whether they think they are there or not, ability-wise, to know that they have a place as a singer.
Yeah.
Because what it's about is being able to achieve what you want to and to learn something new according to like the level that you are at.
Yep.
And so I expect from people kind of according to where they are in their lives and how much experience they have. So that's kind of part of my process. And just to make sure, at least on my part, that both experienced people and less experienced people have everything they need in order to be able to succeed and to be able to practice at home and to be able to learn something new.
Absolutely. And I will add as well, Gilbert was renowned for poo-pooing classically trained opera performers and professionals in the industry, and would go out and find people off the street and would haul them in and turn them into light comic operetta singers and performers. He literally would get people off the street. And so if that was happening in the 1800s, where less people were literate and musically trained, I would think that, you know, you can easily jump in and learn Gilbert and Sullivan. The music can be hard, but it is also really endearing. And while only partially challenging from my perspective, it's also something you will cherish, take away with you. So speaking of that, Sean, when you put a show together, you've done so many of them at this point, 130. Each one of them comes with their own things that you remember and take with as you go forward into the next show. What is it about this production of The Gondoliers, standing as the director in this and helming this production, that you'll take away as a memory to cherish and keep down the road?
Probably this very similar to for most of the shows. It is that experience that the cast and the crew have on the production. The director is just one voice at the table and trying to pull it all together for everybody, trying to make sure that we've got a collective vision that incorporates the set, the costumes, the props, stage management, music, choreo. The directing is a small part, even though it may even be just a little bit more administrative. It's the scheduling and the keeping contact lists and everything else and making sure everybody's there. But it's that experience that the cast has on stage, the volunteers behind the scenes have putting it on. And I may be pushing them to do the toughest dance number twice without a break.
Did you make everybody do it? Are the royals, are they going to have to do
well,
it as
well? Well, they do a version of it in the
bows.
In the finale.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good.
It's only right that people should almost die dancing the Kachuka.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe.
But I mean, as long as nobody gets whacked, that's my... And so far, there has been no injuries that I've heard of.
And but they all leave with smiles.
Yeah.
Like, it is such a good feeling in that rehearsal hall. So I just can't wait till they get that audience and feel it. And I just get to be proud of seeing them on stage.
Yeah. But are there any friendships you've made and or have blossomed or grown as a part of this is making a family. Every time you put a show together, you basically cultivate a family and a group of new friends every single show. And it's a bonded experience in a labor of love for everyone involved that is suddenly gone in the moment. And for me, I can think of every single show that I've been in, and I can recount to you what exactly I remember best about those productions. And maybe it just hasn't happened yet because the show hasn't gone up and it makes it tough to do so. But what's something that you think that you won't quickly forget from having done this experience, Maya?
A theater family becomes a show family. It is a little family, and you have this kinship with the people you work with. And it's interesting, I think, because also I'm just coming in and some of the people who have done GNS quite a bit and now people coming into it and then create this nice connection through it. And then I feel like I miss out on that somewhat being on the production side, like because you are that one step removed, you don't feel the same as in a cast, because I am more familiar with being in a cast. And I think it's even built in those conversations that are like off stage and get an idea of what's going on in everyone's life. And you build that up versus on the production team. I feel like you're a little bit more removed from that, which is fine. I think you need to have some of those boundaries in place just to create kind of a level of leadership and authority. Yeah, I think that's it's good to be just slightly removed, but that's something I love about a show. I think there's a shift also that goes in with Tech Week when everybody's just so tired and they're there day after day after day, you know, and it builds to opening. And I think that's when everyone and production team as well, I find that you create more of a relationship with everyone.
That's true. That really does happen then.
And so it feels like even within the cast itself, because like, for our instance, like the Ducal party has like been so separate in our rehearsal process. Like I think for them to like coming in, they'll feel more integrated into the cast.
Absolutely. You got a little mini show happening within the greater show.
Yeah. And so I think,
do you think though, not to put words and memories in your head for you though, but getting to direct and choreograph the Kachuka, do you think that is something that's going to stick with you and you'll have fond memories of that when you get to see that on stage?
I think on stage, there'll be that shift, I think.
Yeah.
Because it goes from, the rehearsal hall where you're like, oh, just if someone could just point their toe at that point, that would just be right. better.
Get your eyes up. Stop looking at other people's feet.
Don't look horrified to be on stage.
Right.
You know, there's like a couple of those things to work through, but you feel like a proud parent to see it come together. And like finally it's starting to click and you're like, oh, there it is. There it is. You got it.
Is the Kachuka the hardest dance that you've had to choreograph?
Yeah.
Ever?
Probably. It's not that hard, but it is, but it isn't.
It's got a lot of pieces.
It's got a lot of pieces. The small pieces, not hard. Doing them all and singing is hard.
I agree. It is one of those lesser occurring Gilbert and Sullivan dances that has arm movements as well. And so I think that adds a great deal. Once, as soon as arms get involved, it suddenly gets so much more complex.
It is. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I overcomplicate it, but then I feel like I oversimplify. And, you know, it's one of those like self-critical things. So I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just like, we're just going to stick with it. And they're great. Getting it. And so that's what matters.
What's the memory you'll take away, Wynn?
I think this time what I've taken out of it the most and what I'll remember is that I had a chance to dig into the score and the music again as just the music director, being there, watching what everyone was doing and being able to see what the singers were working on and to spend more time thinking about how I could guide them to notice their particular strengths and things they needed to work on and hopefully address those at some point during the process. But also with this cast, because sometimes I do worry about, and I worried about it last year too, that, you know, I will feel kind of disappointed not being in it, just being on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But last year, just music directing for Yeoman showed me that it's actually kind of a whole fun other thing on its own.
Yeah, it really can be.
Yeah. So I experienced that same thing with this show. And remembering this time in particular, there was such an interesting mix of people who I knew really well, who I got to see in different kinds of roles than they've done before, as well as lots of fresh faces that were experiencing it for the first time.
That's amazing. Two things then, following up before I ask Sean what his memories are going to be of this show. It's one, as a musical director, have you had much chance to discuss with Ian Robertson? You've been working with the cast for months and months and months, but as the musical director, largely it falls to having a discussion with the orchestra or the musicians who are who are playing instruments in this regard. And as Morpheus moved in 2014 to just a pianist for their performances, and I'd love to chat about that if we have some time at the end of this with Sean and the reason for that, but have you had much chance to talk to Ian Robertson about the direction and the vision for these particular songs?
Not yet. That's kind of one of the goals for this next week, as both him and I have been quite busy.
Oh, yes.
Luckily, I'm extremely privileged to have Ian as part of the team for this show, as he's a musician who I can trust.
Oh yeah, Honan like, award-winning, prodigy, gifted, talented like musician. It's a definite add to this entire production and something that's a selling feature too. You know, the quality of the accompanist will be world renowned at this point.
And like intuitively, like he's a fantastic musician. So he knows how to follow the singers to help them out. He can be strong when he needs to be strong. He knows when to take time. He really breathes with the singers. And it's just such a privilege to have him involved. I would like to kind of give a shout out right now to our rehearsal pianist, Don Kaczynski, who also learned the score for our rehearsals. And
he was also the accompanist, the rehearsal accompanist for Pirates of Penzance.
Yeah, I could not have done it without Don's really hard work. I was really, really blessed. And so was the cast that they didn't have to hear my piano playing all of the time.
From experience, you're being far too modest. Your skill as a rehearsal accompanist has been, and musical director, handling both at the same time sometimes is par none and appreciated for the last 11 years. This is the second time that you are now musical directing only and not part of the cast. If we have time at the end, I'd love to chat with you about how that feels, because you did allude to that in the interim. Sean, what are you going to take away as a memory from this show?
Well, with so many new cast members, I think I'm really looking forward to our preview performance, because that's where we get to bring together all these high school students from mm-hmm. across the city to see GNS, let them be introduced to the style, but also we have our GNS Junior Theater School, and those students all come to the preview performance. They get to meet their counterparts in the adult show and the junior shows, and it's so touching just to see all of them rehearsing and doing the warm-ups together, and the kids stay and watch the entire show. They steal from the adult show and make their performances that occur the Monday, Tuesday during the run even better. And those connections,
which are April 29th and April 30th at the Pump House, and I highly recommend a ticket to those. They are very reasonable and available on the Morpheus site. Yeah. The link to tickets will be in the show notes here, and I highly recommend you get them. They're going pretty quickly for the Gondoliers this year, and the kids show, the GNS Juniors, the junior and senior program will open on Monday and Tuesday. I recommend going because my two children are both Marco. Yes, my junior is the Marco on the Monday, and my junior senior is the Marco on the Tuesday, which was not deliberate and happenstance, but I am delighted by it, and also have a good little bit of FOMO in regards to that, too.
So that is one of the biggest moments. But aside from that, I also really enjoy the reactions on the opening night with the cast buzz right behind me as I announce the next season shows, and how they react to what our GNS is going to be. And I know there's a lot of rumors and guesses out there.
The rumor mill
is
strong.
And they are all wrong. They are all wrong. Nobody knows what I am doing.
Sean delights in our anticipation.
I think somebody knows. The board has to know at this point.
They don't talk.
That's exciting. And I cannot wait for opening night to find out what next season's going to look like. But moreover, to get a chance to see this production itself. But with 28 performers on stage, I can't help but wonder, and this is a question that's difficult when I ask like a four-hander for Marriage, a Demolition, and Two Acts, and I'm like, what is something the audience might overlook? It's hard when there's only four people on stage to overlook things. But with 28 people on stage and little things happening and little moments here and there, with especially with the chorus and the ensemble, what are some things that you, as the musical director, the director, and the choreographer, have kind of slipped into the show that somebody might overlook or might not necessarily get a chance to see, that you would love for somebody who's listening to this podcast to get kind of an inside edge on it and be like, yo, no, you need to pay attention to this point here because this is a really cool thing?
I think in the opening number, like, because we go on and on and on and it changes and it morphs and stuff, there's been some really wonderful things in the chorus that they're finding, like, and there's some characterizations and they're finding little things and like between the contadine and the gondoliers, and there's a little flirting and there's little like kind of back and forth and some of like those sort of like small moments get missed, I think, because like you're looking at the bigger action is that's going on at the time. So as we're getting closer, I think some of the more inexperienced performers are getting more comfortable in their space and starting to understand that they can make character choices and they can do small things so long as they're not, you know, but it's always a delight to see when someone's really made a choice. And so I really enjoy watching those.
Are there any choices that make you beam with smile?
One of the girls, she faints when Wendy.
Wendy faints.
She swoons when the gondoliers are flirty with her, and it gets me every time.
Oh, I can't wait to look for that. Thanks. How about you, Wynn?
I think I'd just like to point out that particularly some of the chorus soloists, that this is their first time.
Mm-hmm.
And that they've been working really hard on their lines, and I think they're going to make a big impact in that first number. So it's not necessarily something that the audience might notice, like something in particular they do, because what they'll be thinking is like, wow, that person was really confident coming in on their line.
Right.
But to understand the underlying part of that, of how far they came from when they started.
That's a really astute point, because it doesn't get brought up a lot. There are these moments for individuals to shine in these shows, and they're oftentimes given to someone who's never had a chance to shine and never sung as a soloist on stage. And we just naturally think when you're sitting there watching, great job or mediocre job or whatnot. But for these people, this is the first time they've done it. And all of the work that's gone into that to make it sound confident and sound as good as they can possibly make it is a labor of love and dedication. And yeah, celebrating that and recognizing those moments is really important. That's really astute. Yeah, not even something I've considered before. Because we did that in Yeoman as well. There was a bunch of moments where people had solos that they'd never had before. And they really, really worked hard. And the labor that they put into that made them better people and made them better performers as a result and gave the audiences something to enjoy. How about you, Sean?
There are a lot of big moments in the show. There's a lot of things to keep an eye on. But in those full course numbers, I hope the audience doesn't get lost just on the front two rows of the performers, because there's a lot going on in the back three rows. It's tough getting 28 people on stage.
Five rows of performers.
Five rows of people dancing all at the same time, trying to be seen. So that's one. And the other is I'm really looking forward to seeing the costumes and some of the set pieces that we've got, because they're going to bring a little bit more of that subtlety to the two kings and how they are acting as one. And I really am looking forward to seeing how that's going to play out.
The two brothers, when they're acting as kings of the Republic and their costuming is that, okay, I'll be looking for that too. That's a great little teaser for me to be intrigued and interested by. And that also brings me back. This is the third time Morpheus has done this production. Is there a lot of costume and prop and set reuse that's happening, or is all of it pretty much cut from whole cloth?
I would expect most of the leads are new costumes, probably a lot of the chorus as well. Wow. I know we do reuse, but it's putting on the extra touches for each of the costumes. So I know Christy and her team work really hard, and they'll be working right up to the last minute to make sure everybody has something stunning for each of the acts, because they are two different settings.
Wow. That's 56 costumes, if I could do the math right.
At least.
That's wild to think. That is a hefty requirement, a hefty sum. 28 performers on stage, 14 people involved behind the scenes, let alone making it all come together. The set goes up this coming Sunday and will be gone by the end of the first week of May. There's only 8 opportunities to see this production on the stage, and then it is gone for forever. And once again, we return to the drawing board for the next year of Morpheus's shows. But this show will stay on in the memories of everyone who is involved in it. And this show will stay on in the memories of everyone who has had a chance to see it. So if you've seen Gilbert and Sullivan's Gondoliers as performed by Morpheus or another company in the past, I can assure you this experience will be entirely new and different. I will take it back to Gilbert and Sullivan's production of The Gondoliers in 1889. That's right, 135 years ago, when it opened in London. It opened to rave reviews and ran for 554 performances before it finally was closed. It was also moved and opened in New York, and it did not do well. Gilbert went to see it after it had opened, broke the whole entire thing apart, cast it down. They recast a bunch of the roles. It only ran for 106 shows before it was finally closed. Because every show has a lot more to than the music and the lines. It has everything to do with the people who are on the stage. And these 28 performers and your director, musical director, and choreographer are part and parcel with that. Their own unique vision and experience has been brought to the table for this show. And so you will only get a chance to see this version of The Gondoliers one time. Well, unless you go multiple times. Maybe you should. I don't know. There's lots of people on stage. There'll be lots to see. And I keep trying to tell people that what we should do as community theaters, if you want people to see it multiple times, give them a 50% discount on their second ticket, their second night showing. But nobody's taken me up on that yet. Nonetheless, go and see Morpheus's production of The Gondoliers. You will be made better by it. You will look at your relationships with other people. The brotherly kinship between the two brothers is something to take in and delight in, because it'll make you think about your own favorite familial person, and the repartee and the comedy there is between the two of them is just delightful, let alone the relationships they have that are very different with their two wives. And then to see it all unfold and then bring back together in a new and beautiful light, it's definitely a beautiful puzzle that gets broken down and turned into something completely different at the end. Thank you all so much for listening.
Thanks.